It's 7 minutes after 10. I'm Kara Lawrence. In the studio with me today are three participants and organizers of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival, which is back, Corey Summers, for which year is it now? What is the annual? What number are we on? Oh, I've stumped
the
director.
I know that we're in our 70th season.
70th season.
I don't know which year the festival, how long the festival's been going. I want to say like about 45, 46 years.
Well, for you, it's been just a long year of planning.
It has been.
And when does it kick off?
Our festival kicks off this Friday at the First Baptist Church, and we're going to be featuring the local Arcado Ensemble, directed by Andrew Kohler. And we have a visiting guest artist, Terry Barber, who's coming in to do a couple days of outreach in the schools and then to perform with us on the concert on Friday, May 5th.
Also here to talk about it is Andrew Kohler himself. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me back, Kara.
It's just
a few days, but you're very generous to allow me back so often.
Well, you wear many, many hats, as it turns out. And Corey Heitzig is also here representing the Oregon contingent.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course, Oregon being a really critical part of every single Bach festival that I've ever seen. So we'll be talking about a lot of events. So sit down, get your calendars out, and start marking days and concert times for the Kalamazoo Bach Festival. Andrew Kohler, let's start with this opening event, which is on a Friday, and is at, as Corey mentioned, First Baptist Church, Bach and Beyond.
Well, first of all, I'll just say that the Arcado Chamber Ensemble, which is a professional group that I put together when we have the time and the resources to do so, and it's always such a great pleasure for me. I mean, I love the work that I do with students at Kalamazoo College and the community, as well as the students in the Junior Symphony, but it's, of course, a rare treat for me to get to work with not just professionals, but professionals who are my friends and colleagues, people in town. This really is the orchestra of Kalamazoo in a real sense. I mean, these are our local musicians, the very best among us, performing at a really high level. So it's just a great pleasure to work with them, and it's I'm so grateful to the Bach Festival and to Corey for inviting us to open the festival this year. And this program, Bach and Beyond, well, it's precisely what it sounds like. Of course, here we are about to open this festival of music devoted to Bach, which I think in itself is an extraordinary thing, isn't it? I was musing on this the other day. It's just amazing that this guy who dies centuries ago in a relatively small town, by the way, much smaller than Kalamazoo is today, Leipzig, you know, nearly 300 years ago at this point, that we should, you know, in 2017 AD, on the other side of the world, be celebrating his musical legacy in so overt a manner. But the truth of the matter is, he's just a figure of unequaled importance, I think, in music history. So, you know, I've been thinking a lot about how there's these wonderful quotes. Charles Gounod, the French composer, once said that we could reconstruct, if all music was lost, we could reconstruct it on the basis of what Bach left us. If everything from the last century was gone, you know, we could just figure it out all from Bach alone. And indeed, so much music is inspired by him subsequently. And he himself was a kind of compendium of everything that came before him, which I think the Bach B minor Mass, which ends this festival, nicely demonstrates, that in this one sort of nexus point, I think you can touch on almost everything in Western music history. You know, it all sort of intersects through Bach somehow. So the program that I've chosen really focuses on the Beyond part. It's a lot of other pieces. We're doing works by Elgar, we're doing a work by Mendelssohn, we're doing a work by Ernest Bloch, but each one of these pieces, written in the 19th and 20th centuries, in some way channels the spirit of Bach or works that Bach wrote. And then in the middle of the concert, as Corey already mentioned, we have a guest, Terry Barber, who's this fantastic countertenor, used to sing with Chanticleer and has a really big career and does some crossover projects, but is also obviously trained principally as a to sing in, as a countertenor does, in essentially a female range. And he's going to sing one incredibly moving work by Bach, the Erbarme Dich from the St. Matthew Passion, this beautiful aria. And as well, he'll sing two additional arias from other Baroque operas, all of which would have been sung by men at the time. That's the, or boys, in possibly in the case of Bach, which is a really interesting thing. So now, naturally, I guess I should go ahead and mention that in that era, when we're talking opera arias, it would have been castrated men who were singing it. Happily, that's not a practice we partake in anymore. And obviously, people like Terry Barber have found a natural inclination for an ability to develop that part of their voice.
How do you know Terry Barber?
Actually, Terry Barber came to us out of nowhere. He has some connections in town and mentioned his desire to do some outreach concerts here and his interest in the... So actually, it was Kalamazoo, the vibrancy of the arts culture here, that attracted him, and he wrote us. And once we got to know him a little bit, we just thought this would be a perfect combination.
It sure sounds like it, yeah. How wonderful to have an artist reach out and say, I'm just looking to perform, and what does he want to do as his outreach activities?
We are going to be doing 2 days of outreach. We're going to visit both Kalamazoo Central High School and Loy Norix High School. He's going to be performing for them and talking about his career with the high school students. And we'll also be visiting Portage Central High School and doing the same. And then we'll be doing some outreach on campus with the Women's Ensemble. And K College has a class for entrepreneurs in the arts that will also be going there and talking about his career with the students.
Just imagine the look on the kids' faces when he opens his mouth and hits a completely different register than they're expecting.
Yeah.
What kind of training does that take? Do you know, Andrew, anything about that?
I don't know a lot about it. I know that the kind of training has changed a lot. You know, that the expectation is that they're really, countertenors are now trained effectively just as mezzo-sopranos. Obviously, there's a lot of development of the head voice, you know, which is what any singer uses to sing in a higher part of their range, and smoothing out the difference between that and the chest voice, because Terry also sings just as a regular tenor. I mean, he can do that very successfully as well. But I'll leave the intricacies of vocal technique to him and to and to people like Jim Turner.
And, of course, well, singers sing every day, but a countertenor probably has to really know how to warm up and use this register that isn't totally normal. Or
absolutely. One of our big discussions with Terry beforehand was, you know, because so often the literature that he sings is from an older era, and your listeners may know that in... our concept of pitch has crept ever so slightly upward in over the centuries, so that pitch was generally what we hear as an A would have been somewhat lower in Bach's day. So one of the discussions that we had with Terry was, are we going to play at modern concert pitch, because that raises everything for him a little bit, and he can do it, you know, he's going to do it, because that's where our instrumentalists are most comfortable playing. But, you know, even these little half steps or three quarters of a step were under discussion, because it's something that he needs to consider to make sure that that he can fit it into his range.
Why did ranges creep up over time?
That's a really great question, and I'm not sure that there's a really comprehensive answer. But you know, we have organs, of course, from Bach's era and before, and when we look at that length of piping, we know that the pitch level would have been somewhat lower. So I think. Higher tends to sound a little brighter, so people keep trying to push it up. Even today, European orchestras tend to tune a little sharper than American orchestras do, so we're always pushing the envelope somehow.
So someone's going to break a string.
Yeah, right. Really. Could get dangerous.
Let's hear an example of this melody from a recording we found, Franz Bruggen conducting the St. Matthew Passion. The soloists I didn't get a chance to really fully look at, so I don't know if we're going to, what type of voice we're going to hear in this.
Yeah.
But we'll hear the beauty of this excerpt.
Absolutely. This is an exquisite moment by Bach, and this is him at his most Italianate, that is to say, most aria-like, most simple and straightforward. This is not a complicated fugue. It is an aria from the St. Matthew Passion that basically describes Peter's penitence after his denial, threefold denial of Jesus before the crucifixion.
From the St. Matthew Passion, we heard a selection from part two that really is a meditative selection. My guest, if you tuned in during the music, is Andrew Kohler, along with director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival, Corey Summers. And we have Corey Heitzig here as well. And Andrew, we're just wrapping up our discussion on the opening of the Bach Festival, which is this Friday, and featuring Terry Barber, countertenor. Now, what type of voice did we just hear in that recording?
Well, that was an alto that we were hearing, but...
A female.
Yes, exactly, right. But, you know, in a lot of ways, I think it'll be fascinating for people to hear how that will differ in subtle ways, really, from what we'll hear from Terry this Friday.
Subtle because he'll be singing the same pitch.
Correct. Same pitches, same register. You know, he'll be hitting all those same notes, but there'll just be a slightly different kind of breath control, probably. And I mean, one of the reasons why men and castrati at the time were not necessarily in box music, but at in that era were so prized were because they had larger lung capacity. So they could make a larger sound, but still... sing in that kind of really piercing register.
Well, a lot of people, Corey, were excited about seeing Chanticleer, where, of course, you can hear a number of countertenors
That's
in
right.
the group. It's a 12-piece choir. And how was that concert at Chenery?
That concert was wonderful. It was really uplifting, very spiritual in some ways. They had magnificent voices.
It was a real treat to talk to their music director, who's never on stage. He sort of balances from the back of the room. That's his job. And balance is one of those things I would think a countertenor has to consider.
Lives and dies on. Yes, I imagine so.
it's such a strong voice.
So. Yeah. So the rest of the program is really designed, as I was mentioning, to kind of show Bach's legacy beyond this. Of course, in addition to this beautiful aria, Terry will sing two other rather dramatic operatic arias as opposed to this one, which is more religious in nature. And, you know, one of the main takeaways for a lot of instrumental composers from Bach, of course, was his ability to write incredibly complicated and ingenious fugues. And that was one way that people could kind of get back to the spirit of the Baroque and particularly of Bach. And so the other composers, each other piece that we're playing, all somehow have fugues in them and somehow channel the style of a Baroque concerto grosso, which tends to use a small orchestra instrumentation and then pick soloists from within that group. But of the three, we're doing Elgar, we're doing Bloch, a 20th century Swiss composer, and Mendelssohn. I want to focus on Mendelssohn because there's just a few things that are so fascinating about him. One is that the very fact that we were just able to hear Erbarme dich from the St. Matthew Passion is to a certain degree possibly attributable to Mendelssohn, in that that work was not performed after Bach's death for a long time, and it was Mendelssohn who got a copy of the score and said, "This is brilliant, we need to hear this," and really initiated a European Bach revival in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. So he was deeply, he was also living in Leipzig. Of course, he was one of the early music directors of the Gewandhaus Orchestra. They're based in Leipzig. So he was really dedicated to the cultural life of Leipzig and of celebrating Bach's legacy. And the really fascinating thing is that Mendelssohn's love of Bach starts early. He was trained very carefully, as were all composers. Bach's memory was always held by composers, but it just was kind of out of the public eye for a few decades after his death, maybe about a century.
Well, style was changing.
Exactly. You know. Style was changing. But nonetheless, even so, you know, Mozart knows him by the end of his life. Haydn knows him. Beethoven. The people who know already know Bach. And everyone trains. And the same was true for Mendelssohn, of course. And as a young boy, as he's taking composition lessons with a teacher named Carl Zelter, he is put through his paces and he is made sure that he knows how to write fugues and he knows how to write all these things. So we have this legacy of his early exploits, these string symphonies that he writes as a very young, startlingly young boy. And we're going to perform the seventh of these string symphonies in D minor and take a listen perhaps to this final movement in which we can really hear him coming to terms with this fugal style in a very Bachian manner.
Mozart at this age, Mendelssohn at this age, who takes the gold medal?
Well, this is a point of controversy, but I think most people are in agreement that, and when you listen to this, if you listen to a 12-year-old Mozart, you think, my goodness, how precocious. When you listen to a 12-year-old Mendelssohn, you think, that's not possible. How did he do this? That can't be the work of a 12-year-old. I think your listeners will hear in this final movement, a blisteringly well-written and incredibly ingenious. Again, I mean, there's he takes a fugue theme. He does all the tricks that Bach would do with it. He turns it upside down. He makes it start sooner than it had initially. You know, he recombines it. He quotes the fugue theme in the other material that surrounds the fugue. I mean, it's really a tour de force of composition, completely sophisticated. And I don't think anyone who wasn't told would have any notion that this was written by a boy of 12 years old.
Listeners, I know when you hear Andrew Kohler talk about it, you want to join his orchestra. It's probably too late at this point because the concert is Friday, but you can go listen to Arcado Chamber Ensemble, led by Andrew Kohler, as the opening of Kalamazoo's Bach Festival Week. Details at kalamazoobachfestival.org. Here's the Mendelssohn. The final movement of the Symphony for Strings No. 7 by Felix Mendelssohn. It's on the program on Friday night, the program that kicks off the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Week. Here in the studio, I have conductor Andrew Kohler, who will be leading the Arcado Chamber Ensemble in that concert called Bach and Beyond. The festival continues on Saturday with the Red Sea Pedestrians. And Corey, you have a dual role here. As director of the festival, and also you happen to play a little fiddle with this group.
I do play a little fiddle with this group, and one might be thinking, why in the world is the Red Sea Pedestrians on the Bach Festival Week? We're trying to do a series of new concerts this year that start to cross genre and bridge the gap, and like Andrew was talking about how lots of music comes from the history of our music making and from Bach.
Yeah. He made a very good case that everything goes back to Bach no matter what.
Transitions beautifully to this zany local group that's been performing in Michigan for the last decade. We have many classically trained musicians in our group, and I'm looking to start a new series where we highlight musicians that are classically trained yet have crossed over to different genres of performing, and what that sounds like and what that looks like. We have many pieces in the group that are through composed. We have a composer who went to Western, Rachel, our clarinetist. She's was a composition major at Western, and three of us went through the School of Music in the orchestra program and in the recording studio program. So it's just a great way, I think, to highlight and to show different genres and how classical musicians can do other things besides
And so
Bach.
What does the brainstorming session sound like? We need counterpoint. We need imitation. We need a fugue. We need German lyrics.
Ooh. you know, that doesn't usually happen verbally. I think Rachel does her magic, and I tend to do my composing based on Rachel's composing. I also took composition classes at Western, so I've got a few tricks in there, and I draw a lot on my classical training. Whenever people watch us play, they usually talk to us afterwards and say, are you classically trained? Do you have a background? And we pride ourselves in that. I think it's really a neat crossover to be able to do different styles of music.
Where are you offering the Red Sea Pedestrian Concert?
We will be at the Dalton Theater at Kay College on Saturday, May 6th, and we have a special guest performance of Cirque du Quai, which is a student campus group that is going to be doing some fun acrobatic stunts and juggling with us, and they're a pretty popular campus group that performs regularly on campus.
Maybe the composer will be rolling in his grave by the end of this of the concert. One would hope so. We'd get a little excitement out of it.
It'll be fun.
Continue the schedule. I know we've got a lot of events to get through here.
Sure. So the following day, Sunday, May 7th, as some of you may have heard previously aired, Carl Witt will be performing the Goldberg Variations at Dalton Theater on the Kalamazoo College campus. We do a City Sings Bach program that also happens on May 7th, and that is when local areas and churches take part in their Sunday programming by programming Bach on their schedule, on their service that morning. And Monday and Tuesday, we are featuring a new program at the Kalamazoo Public Library called Bach and Jammies. We have soprano Jessica Louise Coe and Carl performing together with Bill Caskey, the children's librarian at KPL. They're going to be performing bedtime favorite stories paired with beautiful songs, arias, repertoire from all different genres and styles, including classical, off-Broadway, jazz tunes, different things paired specifically to go with the stories. And that will bring us to having a little fun inside the organ on Wednesday, May 10th.
One thing you skipped over is Bach Around the Block.
Thank you.
Which Monday. Is the free concert series, which is a series of different concerts at different churches downtown. And that has been a hallmark of the Bach Festival for many, many, many years. And organists have always been so, gung-ho to take part in that and just play a small part of a concert. It's really great. And we have an organist here, Corey Heitzig. So nice to have you here with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for being so patient.
It's a pleasure to be here. Of course, of course.
So what we're going to focus on, though, is something new.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, are you taking part in the Bach Around the Block?
First Congregational's hosting. I have two guest organists coming in to play. I'm not playing this year, but the organ will be featured on Monday. And if you want a closer look, come back Wednesday, and we'll get you inside, and I'll walk you through it.
All right. This is called Inside the Organ Crawl and Pub Stop.
Yes.
Oh, excellent. You're offering this more than once,
correct.
In the day.
The evening begins. I and another organist are collaborating with the Bach Festival to open up our churches and thus the instruments. We're very fortunate in Kalamazoo to have had a renaissance of pipe organ building. We have a series of pipe organ babies, as I call them. Since about the late 90s, many of the churches, especially downtown, have grown to need a new pipe organ and have raised the funds to build them. So in 98, the organ at First Baptist went in all the way around the park through ours, which is at First Congregational went in 2004. So just a little baby, considering the organ's history, the pipe organ's history, goes all the way back to the 3rd century BC. So as Andrew mentioned earlier, because there is an evolution, there's an evolutionary aspect of this. He had mentioned pitch. And if you look at, let's say, an analogy would be the automobile. Henry Ford, in that 100-year history, look at how far the car has come. Well, multiply that by 23, and you've got 2,300 years of pipe organ evolution. So out of that spurns a plethora of instrument sizes, styles, how they're played, what they're composed of, how they sound, what their specialties are, builders. It has become quite a menagerie, and we in Kalamazoo are lucky enough to have several different organs of different styles and shapes and sizes right within walking distance.
I feel like I'm in science class. This is very Darwinian.
It is. We are very, very, very lucky. I've not come across a town of Kalamazoo's size that has had this kind of investment. And what's great is the public gets to see it every single year when the churches open their doors and we get to crawl from one church to another to hear Bach performed on these instruments. So
I can tell you there are about three things I can tell you are on an organ, and that's keyboards, pipes, a bench.
Yes. When you walk into a space and see a pipe organ, you're seeing maybe 5% of the of what is actually put into the instrument. So, yes, if you're lucky enough to see behind the organ console where the organist would sit, you're going to see a series of keyboards, which are known as manuals, and then a pedal board. And then you'll also see with the organist beside those manuals, they have stops, and that determines the size of the instrument and what you're pulling those stops, pulling out of the stops is where that comes from, is how you activate the different sounds within the instrument.
Are those the things people are most drawn to? Because they're the ones I want to grab.
Yes, they move if you've got an instrument that has different pistons, which are presets. They will move the organ stops, and it creates different sounds. So not only are you getting an audio difference when you're pressing and changing registration, which is the how the stops are configured, you're also getting a visual representation of that if you can see behind the organ console and see how they change. So it is all a matter of size, and the instrument at First Congregational is completely unique in the sense that it is an English instrument. It's the only English instrument here in Kalamazoo, and we're lucky enough to have two big French instruments, so the instrument at First Methodist, which will also be featured with my colleague Bernie Falk, and then the instrument at First Baptist is also French in its design and nature, and then we have an American classical instrument at St. A's downtown, St. Augustine's, and it is, they all have different
Simpson?
Compositions. Yeah, the Nichols and Simpson is an American classic instrument, so it's designed to kind of bridge the gap between a French and English and a German instrument and be very versatile. So
now, as an organist, and you there every week, multiple times a mm-hmm. week, playing the instrument, how much of it is your job? I mean, where does the line between your know-how behind the console and then when do you actually have to call an organ technician?
That's a good question.
There has to be.
Because the instrument is enormous. What you see in as far as any pipes that are visible in the sanctuary, which is called the facade, is a small fraction. In the organ at First Congregational, for example, behind the pipes that you can see in the front of the church are 9 different rooms filled with pipes. And to answer your question, it is as much playing the instrument as knowing how or what has gone wrong. So there are many moving parts. Each note is correspondent to a pipe, and those pipes, there are literally thousands in any number of pipe organs in our area. And any one of those pipes, if it has an electrical connection or a rod or a bad piece of leather, or it can go wrong, it can cipher, which means it stays on. So there are times when you would love to call an organ technician and you don't have the time, and you're in the middle of a service or you're going to have to perform. And there are other times when you just kind of go in and work your magic to try to patch it up as best you can and hope you can get out there this week.
Did someone teach you when you were just starting organ? Did
yes.
someone say, okay, you need to know at least the basics?
The basics. It's kind of like, you know, your dad and your car. You know, you got to get the oil changed. You got to, you know, make sure the car is clean and make sure the battery's charged. The same basic gist happens is when you study organ. You've got to know, okay, well, this pipe is making a sound. So either you figure out a way to navigate it around it at the console. So if you've got a D ciphering, it's stuck on. Hopefully you can fit that D into the chords you're playing. Or the other option is to learn the mechanics of the instrument, go in, find the pipe, and stop it from speaking. So stop the wind supply to it. So
you have to know which room it's in.
Exactly. There are 9 different rooms in our church, and it is complicated. And what's funny is that they are jam-packed. It's the size of somebody's house behind that facade. And it is jam-packed with pipes from ranging in size from 32 feet long to the size no larger than a pencil. And it's knowing which pipe is making the sound, where to find it, and how to silence it, because they're made from wood and metal and they speak differently. So this pipe might speak similar to a recorder through a mouth, and another pipe might make a sound based on a reed, like a clarinet, which is housed in the bottom of the pipe. So knowing how to silence that is kind of a challenge.
Is one of your goals to have someone who comes with you on this tour appreciate what they hear the next time they're in church.
It certainly is. It's definitely a goal to keep that art alive and to show more appreciation than your little gray-haired lady sitting behind the organ on a Sunday morning. There's so much more to it than that. And an organist is so much busier than you could ever imagine. And not only are they worried about the technicality of what they're playing, which in Bach's case is very technical, but you're also worried about the instrument itself, its intonation, the tuning, what configuration of stops you're pulling to make the sounds, and how you're using the instrument. And then, heaven forbid, if something does go awry, how to work around it or fix it.
I'm going to ask Corey to do some of the business part here and say, how do you sign up for these inside the organ programs, and how many are there, and how does that work?
So it's quite easy. You can call our office at 269-337-7407, and Linda, our assistant director, will be more than happy to assist you with purchasing tickets. We do three different time slots for the organ tour. We want to make sure that everyone really has an intimate experience with Corey and Bernie. So there are only 8 tickets being sold per concert. So a total of 48 tickets to the public will be open for this. We felt that in order to be able to have conversations and ask questions and really get inside the organ and spend some time in there and explore it, we thought it'd be great to keep it to 8 or even less, I was told, but I pushed for 8. Mm-hmm. You can also go online at KalamazooBachFestival.org, and there you can click on purchase tickets and you can select which time you would like to go, either the 5:30, 6:30, or 7:30 p.m. concert.
Now, it's called Inside the Organ Crawl and Pub Stop. I believe you haven't mentioned the pub part yet.
The pub stop. We thought it'd be nice, you know, after you explore these organs, there's probably lots to talk about. And you're going to be really excited afterwards and have a little adrenaline going and want to just talk with who you were at the concert with. So the Gonzo's Big Dog Brewery downtown, which is a very close walking distance over to the brewery there, we thought would be an excellent place to stop and have a drink, have some pizza, discuss what you just learned about.
Yeah, it's like spelunking the organ.
It really is. And the inside, you have to, when they say crawl, it's true.
I do want to mention, we picked this brewery because the owner of the brewery is an organist.
Is that right? He is. Hidden talent. Well, that's terrific. And this is the first time it's been offered. And Corey Heitzig at First Con, Congregational, and Bernie Folk at First United Methodist.
Yes.
Will be revealing, showing the nether regions of the...
A look behind the facade.
Okay. That's pretty exciting. And I didn't realize the tickets were so limited, so it probably is a good idea to get on the phone and call 337-7407 or head over to KalamazooBachFestival.org. And you know what? We're just about at the end of this hour, and we have some time for some Bach on the organ. But Corey, was there any further details or... history you had to pass on?
Sure. Again, we are super excited to have been asked to open our doors. And it is, I guarantee when you come, you will see and hear and learn something that you've not been exposed to before. So please come see us, come enjoy, come ready to ask questions, and wear appropriate shoes, because we're gonna get into it. So
okay, appropriate shoes. And Corey, before we go, why not run down the full festival in case people are too busy next week to tune in? Because we are going to cover some more events next week, but it might be great to
sure,
do the full festival right
quickly
now.
Run through the festival. So we've got over 15 events happening starting May 5th. Our first one being Bach and Beyond with the Arcado Chamber Ensemble and Terry Barber, our countertenor. On May 6th, we have Bach Rocks, the Red Sea Pedestrians, and Cirque du Quai will get on stage at Kalamazoo College. We have The City Sings Bach on Sunday, May 7th. We have Carl Witt performing the Goldberg Variations, also on Sunday, May 7th at 3 p.m. Bach and Jammies, a new collaboration initiative with the Kalamazoo Public Library. We have Bach Around the Block, as we've talked about, on Monday, May 8th. We have the Bach Legacy Lecture, which Zaid Pixley will join us at Kalamazoo College to really talk about the details and really get into the theory of the Bach B Minor Mass. We have another performance of Bach and Jammies at the Ashtamo Branch on Tuesday, May 9th. We have Inside the Organ Crawl, which you've heard all about it, and it's going to be a lot of fun on Wednesday, May 10th. on Thursday, May 11th. This is a schedule change. We're going to have Zachary Brandon visiting us for the Box Lunch Concert. He is a semi-finalist this year for the Stolberg International String Competition, and we are very excited to have him visiting us.
For the second time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We are presenting new series this year called Breaking Barriers with Bach. We have Thunderbolt and Lightfoot and Dan Mervak performing classical guitar pieces by Bach, and then a mix of folk and indie type style music on Thursday, May 11th at Stetson Chapel. We have a couple of master classes that will be given by our guest soloists that are coming in for the Bach B Minor Mass on Friday morning of May 12th. And then we have a guest artist recital. So the soloists that are performing on the Bach B Minor Mass will be doing their own recital on Friday, May 12th at Stetson Chapel. And we have a second Breaking Barriers concert with Red Tail Ring, and we will feature David Peshlikai on cello and Arturo Zeraldo on viola. And our festival finale will be the Bach B Minor Mass, conducted by James Turner, and the Arcado Chamber Ensemble will join us again on stage at Chenery Auditorium.
It's quite a festival. Good job, Corey. Thank you, Andrew Kohler. Thank you, Corey Heitzig. Let's hear a little Bach to take us to the news from NPR.